I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to Film Chat, a podcast all about an underdog story, a tale of two teams, one rich, entitled, and arrogant, the other humble, making up for in heart what they lack in resources, and with the odds stacked against them. After years of failure, they get a new coach, an inexperienced guy without much respect for authority, but with a kindness and integrity that inspires his young troops. The underdogs suffer some early stumbles, but they fight back with a resilience and determination that surprises everyone, including their foes. And astonishingly, they make it to the championship final looking like real contenders. With the clock ticking down, can they pull off a historic victory? I'd be giving an answer to that question if this was a adaptation of The Mighty Ducks, a film with no contemporary resonances whatsoever. Instead, it's just a podcast in which we talk about and review films. I'm Sam Foster, and joining me, my comrade helping our lowly hockey team defy all expectations and heroically crush the evil Tories. I mean, Hawks. The Hawks. A hockey team with that name. Danny Moran.
Hello. Hello. There's only one review this episode due to the fact that me and Sam have been too busy creating dank Corbyn memes, hashtag JC4PM, in the run-up to the election. However, we did get a chance to see Wonder Woman, the blockbuster comic book smash which stars a woman and is directed by a woman? Oh my God. But can a film directed by and starring a woman be any good? Obviously yes, but stay tuned for our review. We also discussed the news that Sony is trying to earn a few bucks by releasing kid-friendly versions of their back catalogue, and report on the news that Terry Gilliam has finished shooting the most anticipated film of his career, Jabberwocky 2! No wait, I've got that wrong. It's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. All of which should leave me just enough time to perform my latest impression, Johnny Depp reviewing the Baz Luhrmann film, Australia.
Australia's a great movie. He's a Hugh Jackman, he's a resilient and firm actor. I'm truly sorry for anyone who hasn't seen Australia.
Films, lots of films, films. He's good films, bad films, fun films, sad films, films we love, weird films, Lars von Trier films, old films, new films, some John Woo films, films that star Peter Finch, films by David Lynch, films, short films, 6 hours long, we've got films up to your gills with films, 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 movies. Are you feeling comfortable? Film Chat has begun.
I want to welcome back to the podcast superfan James Andrews. James, hello.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure to have you.
I like
it's great.
How you chose me to come and not a woman.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of every week we get a lot of people write in asking to be on it, and we just usually pick the man. That's what we've done again this time.
The manliest man.
The manliest man. The hottest dude that we know. We were going to have you on last time to review My Life as a Courgette, but due to a scheduling mix-up, you couldn't make it. So
whose scheduling mix-up was that, Sam?
I think there was mutual responsibility.
A breakdown of communication.
A breakdown in communications. So, but we're glad that you could make it this time around.
In lieu of a correspondence section, because we have a correspondent here, I've created a little topical election film quiz.
Excellent. Yes.
As a nice little icebreaker. Because
things are awkward as fuck in here. Yeah.
So you guys want to play my awesome election film quiz?
Yes.
I think of a snappy title. That's what it's called.
It's a good title, and I do want to play it.
I'd be honored to.
There's five questions.
Okay.
There can be multiple choice.
So are James and I collaborating in this quiz, or are we? Is it versus kind of thing?
Do you want to go
versus? Is it university challenge style?
I think teams.
I want to crush you. No, I probably won't know the answers.
Let's form a progressive alliance here.
All right.
Between you, both of you guys.
Coalition of Chaos.
Coalition of Chaos. Coalition of chaos. Me and James, yeah.
Okay, question one. Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn share a love for which film? I'll give you the options. The Iron Lady. I, Daniel Blake. The Triumph of Will. Kathy Come Home. Casablanca. Or Kangaroo Jack.
I'm going with Jack.
Kangaroo Jack? Mm-hmm. Really? That doesn't sound plausible to me. I would have said something like Casablanca, because it seems like, but I don't know if that's like a sort of too obvious. So,
yeah.
Well, maybe Kathy Come Home, since it is a classic, and also
it's
Theresa May.
Choices.
Sorry?
It's on progressive choices.
No, I'm gonna my guess would be Kathy Come Home. Let's try it.
No, it's Casablanca.
No, it is Casablanca.
You really like Jack?
No, like, yeah. My joke was that it was like a really Tory or fascist movie.
Oh,
like,
I see.
A progressive movie. And then the actual answer, then a stupid answer. I mean...
Well, I was playing 12-dimensional chess rather than, like, you were just playing, like, you know, tack or something.
Sure. You overestimated my intelligence there.
Yeah, so who's the real loser in the question, Danny? I thought you were smarter than this.
True, you're right. I feel ashamed. Question two. According to IMDb, who has the most registered TV appearances? And so, but basically, the way this works on IMDb is that if you're on Question Time, that is logged as one entry on your IMDb, even if you're on multiple episodes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So who's got the most out of Theresa or Corbyn?
I would have guessed JC.
He must have a lot.
He's been his MP for such a long time.
Yeah. He's always piping up as well.
He's always piping up, isn't he? What's the answer, Danny?
The answer is... actually, Theresa 43.
Fuck.
And Corbyn 36, just because she was Home Secretary for longer.
I see. Wow. Get on those, she was just on those TV princesses.
Though, Theresa 43, think, 42 of them were before the election.
Nice.
She's nowhere to be seen.
She's nowhere to be bloody
satire.
Seen.
Okay. Question three. Paul Nussle called upon which 2006 documentary to be banned from being shown in schools? Do you want some options?
I would love some options, Danny.
I need some options.
Okay. We need options.
Shut Up and Sing. An Inconvenient Truth, Zidane, A 21st Century Portrait, or Jackass Number 2. All these documentaries came out in 2006.
What's Zidane?
It's a documentary about
Zinedine Zidane. Yeah.
It won't be that.
Zidane. The original title for that was Zidane in the Membrane. And they changed it.
Oh, God.
Well,
what's the second one again?
Look, I think the obvious choice here, and for our non-trying-to-trippers up, you know,
Inconvenient Truth?
Would be Inconvenient Truth, yeah. Quizmaster.
It's not going to be that, though, is it?
That is correct.
Oh, yeah, we got a point. James, that's audibly high five for the radio. Boom. Nailed it. Great high five. Extra point for that.
Question, okay. I mean, you're competing against nobody, so you still will be number one on the leaderboard.
Yeah.
Question four. What is Theresa May's favourite Bond film? Is it For Your Eyes Only, You Only Live Twice, Die Another Day, or The Spy Who Loved Me?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Probably not Die Another Day. That would be...
The Spy Who Loved Me.
I'm going to guess that as well. The Spy Who Loved Me. Danny?
Incorrect.
Oh, fuck. Motherfucker. Fuck you fucking can't. Sorry, I just got really into it. For one second.
You Only Live Twice. Huh. According to an interview on the Mail on Sunday.
Well, how much do you read into that, Danny? Do you see that as a classic, mate? Were you like, oh, of course... Think you've seen all the Bond films, you're like, which one do I associate most with Theresa May? It's obviously that one.
It's got Sean Connery pretending to be a Japanese man.
Bit
it's
racist.
Racist.
Bit racist. Likes
that.
She is a racist, so she would like that.
Yeah. Racist. And finally, what is Corbyn's favourite film? Is it The Great Gatsby? Is it The Great Escape? Is it Oz, The Great and Powerful? Or is it The Great Wall? That Matt Damon movie that came out about 2 weeks ago.
Well,
I feel like it would have to be something political.
Yeah, because Corbyn tends to choose very like
Corbyn-y stuff.
Very Corbyn-y stuff. Mm. So wait, what were the first two? The Great Escape and The Great Gatsby.
Yeah,
Great Escape.
Not Gatsby.
Surely, well, I don't know. You wouldn't think it'd be Gatsby.
Escape.
It's Gatsby.
Fuck! It's Gatsby.
The fucker.
It's bloody Gatsby.
He's hiding things from us.
What's going on there? Well, I guess neither of them are particular. They're not like, you know, sort of socialist tracks, are they, either
the
of those
recent
movies?
Gatsby.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Baz Luhrmann one. That's his favorite ever film. It was the the Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby.
I think the Robert Redford one.
But... he was inspired to watch it after seeing that meme of DiCaprio lifting a cocktail and smiling, and he was like, "Where's this from? Where's this delightful gif from? I want to see that film." I love that Jack White version of that U2 song. It's my favorite song now.
So at the end of it, the scores is you got most of the points because you're the only ones playing.
Yes, we got to win. Let's have another audible high five for podcasting. Oh, that was even better than the previous one.
You got.
I think we only got one question right.
Yeah, you only got one right actually. Collection.
Well, we still win. There's no other fucking team is playing. You're the loser, Danny.
20%. That's not majority, is it?
Proportional representation.
Yeah, if it's proportional representation, you would have won. Would have been a landslide.
Danny, I want to formally take this opportunity to thank you for creating the quiz. I had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah, I felt included.
Yeah, we included James, mm-hmm. which is nice because we normally talk over him. Don't let him speak, don't let him say anything or contribute.
You're very welcome.
So thank you very much. Let's move on now to a different part of the podcast. Superhero films announced, casting rumors leaking out. M. Night Shyamalan's film is hated, Paul Thomas Anderson's is fated, Meryl Streep's Oscar tipped, Matt Damon's in a viral vid, Michael Bay's made a mint. That's the news that's fit to print. News. Interesting news from a kind of, well, it seems like a new thing that I haven't seen a company do before. Interesting maneuver. So Sony Pictures, they are creating new child-friendly versions of some of their famous movies. So a lot of the time in Hollywood, they kind of do this anyway to be shown on airlines and that kind of thing. You know, they have like recut versions of their films with less of the gore and boobies and stuff. But Sony has now announced that they will be making these kinds of versions of their movies available through iTunes and two services that I have not heard of before, Vudu, spelled V-U-D-U, and Fandango Now. Those are both pretty exciting sounding things that I'm going to be signing up for immediately after we finish recording the podcast. So there are 24 movies in their initial lineup. Some of them are quite interesting choices. They don't seem like the sort of films that I would immediately offer to a child to watch, even in bolderized form.
Give us a few examples.
I'll give you a flavor of some of the choices here. Elysium, the action movie with Matt Damon, is a sort of metal arm and stuff. Grown-Ups and Grown-Ups 2, Hancock, the film about the sort of naughty superhero film with Will Smith, Moneyball, all about like baseball guys like doing smart baseball stuff. Do the kids want to see that?
It's quite talky, that movie.
Very talky, and it's very like mathy, isn't it? Don't they like basically use a spreadsheet to be good at baseball or something? Yeah, not that familiar with it. Goosebumps, which is already a child's film, so it's almost surprising that it requires recutting. And also loads of Spider-Man films, Pixels, that utterly awful Adam Sandler comedy. Well, I haven't seen it, but I assume that it's awful. Captain Phillips is certainly a bit of a strange one. I mean, all about like poor Tom Hanks getting like pirated, hijacked by pirates. Kid friendly? Like, what happens in the child friendly version of the film? Are the Somalian pirates like animated elephants or something like?
Yeah,
just to lighten the mood a little bit. And the US Navy is just like a fleet of dinghies operated by like cats or something. I don't know.
Can they cut in other scenes or they're just cutting out scenes?
Let's assume they're not doing massive reshoots on 24 movies in order to add like child-friendly content. Yeah, that would be pretty surprising.
Yeah, I mean, for some of them it kind of makes sense because Adam Sandler's brand of comedy... it's just sort of, it's almost like Carry On, you know, it's just like toilet humor and...
Well, he tends to play growing up children kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not like Judd Apatow where it's like very sweary and like sex oriented.
Yeah.
You know, frequent, you know, what they say in the ratings, like frequent references to sex and drug use.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
That doesn't really exist in Adam Sandler movies. So they're kind of already kids movies. So I can understand the logic there. I mean, I don't know why he hasn't been doing this for years, just to increase his demographic.
But why would a child want to see a film called Grown Ups? If I was a child, I'd be abundantly put off.
Really?
I'd be like, that's excluding me. Grown Ups?
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I would. What is it? That's not for me. Yeah, it says they're right in the title. I'm looking at it like, one, it's not interesting.
You mean as a kid, you only watched films like with kids in.
Danny, here's an example of the title of a film I would want to watch. children.
Little children. That Kate Winslet
boys.
Drama.
Just films like that. Like if a movie is called like Under 10, I'm interested, assuming that I am under 10.
It's dangerous territory, Sam.
Yeah, but like at grown-ups, no thanks. Sounds boring. Don't want to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, what film do you really want to show your kid but don't want to show them the full version? You know what I mean?
I think that in all circumstances, I want to show my kid the full version. Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, you'd be a cool parent.
I kind of had some moments as a kid where I wish my parents had shown me like the non-sex scene versions.
Oh, really?
Them.
Yeah, like, any specific films?
It's all a blur. My childhood.
Caligula?
Sexy blur.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Pulp Orange.
Pulp Fiction or something? That might be a fun film for a kid to watch.
37.2 degrees Le Matin.
You remember that Adam Buxton skit where he's in the car and he's like plays his children the song Fuck the Police, but he turns down the volume every time there's a swear word?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You could just do that, right? I think like that's what I would do at home. Say if we were watching like 100 Days of Sodom or whatever.
Movie. He did it.
Every time.
But you just put a little card over the screen and narrate what you want to be happening. And you just, you know, it's all friendly. Like they're just playing cards or something. It's like a little scene of like, you know, they've like sequence or something.
I think it's terrible for child psychology, that kind of thing.
What do you mean?
They just know that something more exciting was going on.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
And then you just have a greater thirst.
I sort of feel like, from my memory of being a child and watching movies that had adult content and more catching bits of, like, you know, like sex and movies and stuff, I think that I was just totally nonplussed and not interested. That's it. Well, I think
that's where you and I differ, Sam.
Oh, really? You were like... Yeah.
That's where you're fucked up and Sam's as healthy.
Yeah. I just don't remember being... I think I was just like, you know... Come on, let's get back to the fun and games.
Fun games.
Chase a balloon, you fucking boring adults.
What age are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't have I don't have a specific age in mind.
The difference between like 8 and 12.
Yeah, of course. Well, 12.
You know, potential mental health scarring aside, I think it kind of potentially ruins the fun of like watching a movie which you're too young for. Well, that was always, you know...
Yeah, definitely.
Like sneaking to watch something. Mm, like, you know,
that's what I mean,
your parents are asleep and you're like, I'm going to watch Terminator 2. And yeah. I'm only 8 years old.
What is
10
that?
Years too young to see
check
it.
Me out.
Check me out.
Is anyone seeing this? This is so cool.
I missed that feeling, you know.
Yeah.
Not being allowed to do shit.
I wish they released movies that had like a 28-year...
Oh, God, that would be
28-year-old rating or something.
30.
So I could, 30. A 30 film so I can still sneak in, yeah.
It's making me think of that Muppet Christmas Carol scene where Scrooge sings. Sometimes they cut it out. It's too emotional.
What are you talking about?
There's two versions of Muppet Christmas Carol.
Let's hit it. Start from the beginning. Because this sounds good.
Every year when Muppet Christmas Carol is on TV, the question on everyone's mind is will Scrooge sing? And it's will Scrooge sing at the point where him and Belle... have had they meet at the Fuzzywigs Christmas party, and then the next scene is like the end of their relationship and where they sing The Love Is Gone, but sometimes they don't sing it because it's too painful. That's the kids version.
So
I don't know if that's actually why, but
so we're talking about censorship not for like adult content but purely for like height of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
For a Muppets film.
Yeah,
that's insane.
That's crazy.
How would Inside Out be making it to the cinema?
Exactly. Was the kids' version of Up just start 15 minutes in or something?
Inside Out made me cry within the first 3 minutes. I just burst into tears.
Inside Out's a fucking emotional film.
Oh, God.
The emotions went on a journey, but my emotions went on a journey.
Absolutely.
Two journeys.
Parallel journeys.
Two parallel journeys. This film's so powerful.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For many, many years, Terry Gilliam has been trying to make The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. He got quite close in the late 90s with a version with Johnny Depp, but as documented in the film Lost in La Mancha, basically every problem that can hit it from production hit them. There was like storms, their sets washed away, the main actor got really badly injured and they had to call the whole thing off. And he's been trying to mount a production of it for years and years with various different cast members attached at various different points in time. But unbeknownst to anybody, and perhaps because he didn't want to jinx it, he has finished shooting The Man Who Killed Don Quixote with Adam Driver as the lead and Jonathan Pryce playing Don Quixote.
Cool cast.
And yeah, so it's happened. It's happened.
So, well done.
So well done, Terry. Just don't die between now and getting it released.
Oh, man.
It would fucking suck if he did.
That would fucking suck. Poor lad.
But that's a cool pairing. I love Adam Driver. He's good in everything. He's just one of those actors.
Probably yeah, it's a very cool pairing.
Leading man in Hollywood, I would say.
And Jonathan Pryce is riding high after playing the High Sparrow in Game of Thrones. So yeah, so I'd be excited to see him up on our screens. Do we know that much more about what's going on with this, or has he just sort of announced it? And I think maybe we can just take a little time out now to celebrate.
Yeah.
Maybe with a solemn podcast-friendly silence. Well done.
The only problem now is that he's just created so much expectation for it, right? By having this long gestating pre-production period. Like, it better be a fucking masterpiece, right? Like, it's taken so long to get going.
Well, he hasn't made a movie that people really acclaimed in quite a while, right?
Yeah.
Like, no one really gave a shit about his last film, The Zero Theorem.
Yeah. The thing is, what if, you know, nothing gone wrong on the original production, it had just been a three-star film?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just an okay
yeah.
film. But because so much like the history of the movie is like, you know, is very interesting unto itself, so it's now got this, you know, it's got to compete with its own backstory.
Right, maybe it'll come out and it'll be like a sort of Johnny English style like slapstick comedy. It's just about like pratfalls and like he, you know, his like underpants get caught in his shoes or something.
And Gilliam's like, it's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Everyone else is like, what
he's like, this is my masterpiece.
This is it.
Yeah.
My magnum opus.
And maybe it'll be exactly like, what is the film where they hide inside the elephant's vagina?
Grimsby?
The Grimsby. It'll be like that. I think it'll have
shit,
that.
You re-sim it for a joke that I should have said, you know, I think that
Lawrence of Arabia?
Shower?
Surf's Up, I believe. Yeah, I think like that's the real mystery. You know, after you spend that long trying to make a film, there's too much pressure on it, you know? Maybe you shouldn't even release it.
Well, I don't know if it's changed, but in the original Johnny Depp version of the project, it was Johnny Depp as a modern guy who'd somehow traveled back in time. But wouldn't it be amazing if he just hasn't updated any of the references and it's like, it's still set in the 90s?
That'd be great. I think it should start with Terry Gilliam as himself traveling back in time to the 90s to finish his fucking film. And then just cut into the film. It has loads of framing devices like the Grand Budapest Hotel.
It's a great film, so
yeah.
Why not ape its structure?
It should start with, like, in the center future, Terry Gilliam's great-great-grandson or whatever opening a book. It's like, remember my great-great-grandfather's greatest film, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, and so on and so forth.
It's a great film, The Brothers Grimm, but his second best film, Tideland, but that is only slightly superior to The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
Sam and Danny both watched a film and they decided to record a few opinions on the things they saw. You're gonna hear them in a moment or so. There could be angry disagreements, but their views are normally quite close. A joint review shared between two podcast brothers. Do they let one another speak or do they interrupt each other? The light is on, the guys are in, so let the chat begin. Start talking now.
So, Wonder Woman, this is a milestone comic book film. It's the latest in the DC slate, the sort of struggling DC cinematic universe, which has only produced absolute turds so far in the form of Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad, which are complete garbage. And we were kind of excited in some way for Wonder Woman, or there was a bit of anticipation riding on it based on the expectation that it might not be like utterly terrible. And it's also the first, like, really major superhero film to star a woman, which is kind of insane given that the whole superhero craze has been going on for, well, you know, about two decades now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's been basically two previous examples that I can think of headed by women, and they were both kind of almost pseudo straight-to-DVD efforts, you know, that, like, were immediate flops. Those being Catwoman, starring Halle Berry, and Elektra, with Jennifer Garner, the Daredevil spinoff. This one comes with a lot more pomp and circumstance and has been quite well received critically and has also been a huge box office smash. I think it's broken the record for the amount of money made by a film directed by a woman. So well done to it. The director is Patty Jenkins, who's best known for directing Monster. And she almost had a crack at a previous superhero film and she was going to helm Thor the Dark World for a while, but then departed due to creative differences with Marvel. So
she was like, let's not make it shit. And they were like, nah, let's definitely
we're thinking of a different direction, Patty. We're thinking of shit. So we're going to go somewhere else. So yeah, and I think there's been like quite a bit of nerd chat around this film. Like all the nerds are getting excited about it.
James doesn't know anything about it because he's too cool.
James is too cool for it. And in some ways, so am I, since I feel like I haven't really been keeping up with all the chatter around it particularly. And it's always funny watching this sort of hornet's nest of like sweaty dorks who like, just can't bear any kind of like slight variation from the white man films and the way they get stirred up by any of these kinds of things. So I imagine they've all been really excited and think that it's some kind of like SJW plot to like destroy white men and prevent them from breeding. Here's the Wonder Woman set up on a beautiful remote island filled with tall female warriors. There's a young princess, Diana, and early on in the film, the island is attacked and she has to travel to the mainland with Chris Pine, who's a fighter pilot, and get involved in World War One in order to defeat the Greek god of war, Ares, who seems to have been stirring up some trouble. That's basically the outline. Danny, would you find that to be a reasonable synopsis? Yep,
absolutely.
And here is a clip of Wonder Woman, played by Gal. I wish I knew how her name was pronounced.
Godot?
Either Godot or Godot, I'm not really totally sure. And she's having a little chat with Chris Pine and a sort of comedy, bumbling English lady played by Lucy Davis.
Why don't I meet you back at the office? And meanwhile, I'll take this for safekeeping.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
You gotta put the sword down, Diana, please.
It doesn't go with the outfit.
At all. Put the sword down, first of all.
Promise me you will protect it with your life.
Yes. No.
You can trust her. Just hand that over.
Shield.
Just hand the shield to her.
There we go. Whoa.
You got it. Thanks, Etta.
This is easy.
So, I think my reaction to this movie is that it's fine. I really wanted to love it just to prove all those MRA guys wrong. Well, they're going to hate it anyway, but you know what I mean. But
yeah, like really, really rub it in their face.
Situation,
yeah.
Rather than a Ghostbusters situation. It's got many of the problems that comic book movies generally have, which is slightly odd pacing and a somewhat unclear message about what the film's trying to say.
Yeah.
There's just a general love conquers all.
I think that's where they were going. I mean, yeah, that's definitely the idea of it.
But it's done with a lot of sincerity. And, you know, out of the previous DC movies that seem to be against heroics and just having an uncomplicated heroine whose backstory isn't that somebody she knows died so she became a hero. It's just because she's a good person and she does the right thing. And in these troubled times, I warmed to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Trait. Well, yeah, especially because like the previous two movies are all about these like just incredibly grumpy, miserable people who hate other people and have seemed very opposed to the sort of basic ideas of heroics.
Yeah.
So it definitely did feel refreshing in those terms.
Yeah, and also, this might be a slightly depressing point, but just the very fact that it was a comic movie with a woman just kept it interesting throughout because I haven't seen this before. And even when the finale descends into the sort of stereotypical CGI, flamey, explodey third act, which seems to conclude every comic book movie, I was like, well, you know, this is not just some dude.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Itself made it different.
I think that there's, I mean, I'm trying to put my finger on exactly what it is, because it's more than it's just that there's a woman in it, but I think there might be something to do with the fact that it doesn't feel like tied down to gendered notions of what a female hero would do.
Yeah.
That she just does very traditional superhero type stuff, basically. And there are definitely things you can quibble with in the movie in terms of like the way it deals with the gender aspects. But I think the overall thrust of it, where it doesn't feel like it's made by people who are like have a hang up about the fact that their hero is a woman.
You know? Not at all.
And I was seeing some chatter on Twitter from women who had seen the movie and felt like, you know, it really felt like new. And, yeah. You know, it's not something that, you know, I'd be churlish to kind of rain on that parade, because if you are feeling for the first time, like, you're getting this, like, exciting representation of your own gender on screen, like bizarrely it feeling like a new thing. I wouldn't want to take anything away from that.
Yeah.
And she's very, I mean, Gal Gadot, I'm going to go with Gadot.
Go for it.
She is, I don't think she's like an incredible actress, but she has a lot of presence. She's incredibly beautiful. And she just looks,
Wonder Woman here.
What a bastard.
She looks very, like, she definitely looks the part. I mean, she looks superheroic. I think there's an element to which,
she can strike the pose.
She can definitely strike the pose. She does, and which she constantly does. There's a lot of, like, slow-mo in the movie, and a lot of it is, like, her just, like, simply striking a heroic pose to camera. But, you know, she does that really, really well. I think there's an element to which her kind of heroic mode, because she's a beautiful woman, is, like, as opposed to a man who, you know, the sort of traditional masculine handsomeness is kind of like rugged and can be get like a bit dirty and tousled and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think the standards of beauty are applied in the same way to women. So she has to remain kind of like salon fresh at all times. Like
sweaty.
She doesn't sweat, and she doesn't, even though like quite a substantial portion of the film is set in one of the dirtiest wars, just in mud terms, of all time, World War One. She doesn't really have to deal with too much grime, you know? Her hair is always remaining pretty much perfectly curled and stuff, even when she's, like, literally engaged in trench warfare. So, you know, so that sometimes, like, looked a little bit weird. But, I mean, there's like, a couple of moments in the film that I think really land in terms of heroism. And I can see why it would, you know, well, people would respond well to it. It was the sort of thing where I was like, it was working enough, and I could imagine being a sort of young girl and being incredibly blown away, or young boy, for that matter, like, just being really, really blown away and excited by it. I have a couple of other things that struck me about that aspect of the movie. The sort of main quibble I have about the way that they do the gender stuff is that there's this horrible cliche of, like, if you have a beautiful woman in your film, like, men's jaws go slack and they're like, you know, eyes go wide and they're just like blah 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 blah, and that sort of keeps happening in the movie, like every time she encounters a new group. Yeah. Totally Looney Tunes style. Like the jaw drops to the floor, the tongue like rolls out, like unfurls,
heart leaves out of his chest.
Yeah,
he starts howling.
He starts going awooga. But like that happens about like five times in the film.
Do you reckon that was just unscripted? But Gal Gadot is just that attractive.
Oh,
every
ad-lib
line. The actors have met her.
Let's just try this. Let's just try this off the script. See how that goes. Yeah. So that felt somewhat lame to me.
Do you think that's the kind of thing where it's so ingrained that if they're weren't having those kind of reactions, it would just seem so bizarre to have such a beautiful...
Well, I think that maybe that's what they were thinking, but I really don't think so. I think it's like, they have other shit to worry about. They're fighting World War One, you know what I mean? Like, they know what women look like.
Yeah.
I think it's mainly notable because there really aren't actually that many women in the film once she gets off her island of Amazons. But I do want to raise something else that I quite liked about it. And I think the romance is done unusually well for this type of film. Not that it's anything to really write home about, but I thought she had like real chemistry with Chris Pine. And there's just a couple of scenes of them flirting and, you know, romantic building and stuff, which is usually both embarrassing and like dull because it feels, you know, they're just forced to include it.
Sure.
And especially in a movie where the lead is a woman and like women are almost always relegated to solely romantic parts in these types of films, that it feels especially good basically that they handled it quite well rather than it like just making her feel like she's actually sappy or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought they navigated all that stuff pretty well, and like, you know, there's a kind of romantic payoff at the end of the movie, and I was like this worked. I was like, this is good. I mean, because in these types of films, especially once you've seen like 8,000 of these superhero movies, like any moment where I feel like something is clicking and you feel like the movie is actually working on you in some way, and like deep within your like jaded heart,
so
something begins to stir very slightly, it's like, you know, there's something exciting about it. Especially because what you were saying about these movies, like structural problems and the way that the pacing is usually off because they've done all these reshoots and stuff. And there is plenty of that in this movie, but when the story and kind of clicks together in some way and you realize that it's done some functional, effective stuff, it's satisfying. It's like, shit. And I think that this, certainly the fact that it had any of those moments puts it head and shoulders above the previous DC movies. But I think in general it was doing them pretty well.
Yeah. World War One is an odd choice of setting.
I agree, yeah.
And I think part of the problem is that there's this whole message about Wonder Woman wants to end the war, but she's an action superhero, so she's got to kick ass to end the war. But rather than her fighting Nazis, which may have just been conscripted men, but it's easy to get on board with there's this evil.
Yeah, their uniforms have skulls on them. And
exactly.
Bloody, yeah.
But this is set in the end of the war, and the villain is trying to perpetuate the war while the peace process is going on. And it makes a point of saying how demoralized and...
The German army, they're ready to surrender.
They've got their resources, they've been fed, they've been paid. So there's a bit where she's like horrified by the effects of war, and you're like, okay, this is pretty cool. And then she immediately has to go kick some ass, but like, aren't those German guys just as like fucked up? And,
yeah,
like,
exactly. They're the victims as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got a bit of an odd, not sure what it's trying to say. War is bad, but also kicking ass is cool.
Well,
so,
yeah. Yes, I mean, I think the original comic book origins are in World War II,
yeah,
and I think they moved into World War I because they to avoid similarities with Captain America: The First Avenger, which is set in World War II.
Yeah, and also maybe just visually make it distinctive from the opening, which is set in this beautiful sort of Greek island paradise place. And because it's World War I, it's very kind of like muddy and dark, and it kind of apes the Zack Snyder aesthetic, which was a bit unwelcome. And there's an over-reliance on CGI and slow motion, but the slow motion is used in the way it's used in like sports coverage.
It's yeah.
More like,
yeah, it is.
Take a
yeah.
step back, look how awesome this is. It's like quite distancing. I'd rather see just a really well choreographed.
Yeah. Well, it definitely like takes you out of the fight a bit.
Yeah.
Like it kills any kind of sense of like rhythm in the fight scenes. The fight scenes are probably the weakest part of the movie, to be honest. They did feel like they were mainly to create these tableaus.
Yeah.
But like they're not actually exciting.
I can't wait for all the gifts to come out from Wonder Woman.
There'll be some good gifts.
Some quality gifts. Some dank memes.
A bit, and this is particularly true in the finale, which is unpleasantly reminiscent of the finale of Batman v Superman in the way that it looks. It's kind of like set in this grey concrete environment where half of the shit is on fire and the villain is this, you know, other kind of like grey blob firing angry things at the hero. And just a total like blue screen mess. I mean, it looks like it was basically shot with her standing still and like a wind machine. And then they painted everything in afterwards. That was a bit of a weak moment.
But definitely a big step in the right direction.
Definitely a step in the right direction. There are things that set it apart, and I feel like it make it worthwhile. And it's one of those movies where if you hear about people going to it and like kids going to it and loving it and wanting to, you know, kick ass afterwards and feeling, you know, like empowered, they're good.
That's
good for them.
Yeah.
Then it was a success and it was worth doing.
My favorite film stars Bridget Bardot. She's the queen, but she wants to be in radio. So she starts a podcast with her friends, and the terrorists try to stop her, but she beats them in the end.
So we need to prep for all the different conclusions of the election. This has been recorded on Wednesday night. You know, the election is tomorrow. This won't go out, it's probably Sunday. Maybe Monday, if I'm a bit lazy.
I wish. Next Thursday, more like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we've been busy, you know. We've been too busy. We've been too busy finding for the future of this fucking country, James.
The first thing I'm going to do when I go home is listen to last week's episode.
I think we're all pretty tense. I'm certainly like absolutely shitting myself at the prospect of what's going to happen in the election. But like, yeah, when this episode comes out, that'll all be history, and we'll be living in a completely new world. So we have to sign off in an appropriate way.
Yeah. We did it, guys.
We did it. Oh, my God.
Baby.
Can't believe it.
Dare to dream.
When I say I can't believe it, I mean I can believe it. And it was inevitable. It was inevitable.
For the many, not the few.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Teresa.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Tim Farron. Even though I can't believe the Lib Dems have been completely wiped out.
I can't believe the Lib Dems don't have any MPs. And when I say I can't believe it, I mean that was also inevitable and obvious.
Oh, brilliant.
Delightful.
Oh, God. I can't fucking believe it.
I feel like these reactions will actually be kind of similar. Like, fuck you.
Fuck
you, you fucking PM. You're staying in your post.
Fucking racist.
You fucking racist.
Saudi Arabian gun-selling bitch.
You ran a disgusting campaign. It was lazy and arrogant. Linton Crosby is one of the worst humans alive, and he should be strangled.
Tim Farron,
fucking
Tim
hell.
Farron, Prime
you know,
Minister.
We
all
underestimated him.
We underestimated him. Wow. I mean,
didn't realize how popular milk was.
That shit he said about chemicals turning frogs gay really cut through to the electorate in a way no one expected.
Yeah, it turns out that's quite a popularly held view.
Yeah,
everyone's saying it.
I checked the Independent, and it turns out the image of him holding some milk is actually the most shared of the election. And it was really, people found it inspiring. And now we can see why, because he's become Prime Minister. I can't believe they've got a 200-seat majority.
That's insane.
Didn't even know they were like fielding that many candidates, even. They've taken back Scotland, which they never even had in the first place. Astonishing. Astonishing result for them.
Can't believe that all of Scotland's gone Lib Dem.
It's gone Lib Dem. It's just gone bloody Lib Dem. Who would have thought it? I don't know. There must have been some kind of rounding error in the polls, because it wasn't showing. But fair play to them. I mean, fair bloody play.
Fair play. Yeah.
Fair play. We're going to get
game
a good... We're going to get a good Brexit. Game recognised game. It's going to be good for Brexit.
Oh, hung Parliament.
Hung Parliament.
Yes.
Hung Parliament.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I just sound almost as happy as I did in the other universe where we won an outright majority.
Even happier.
Yeah, the Schadenfreude is absolutely powering me.
Can't wait for this coalition of chaos to kick off, which is fun to say.
My new magic money tree.
Oh, look, I'm planting one I'm planting a commemorative tree, and I'm calling it the money tree. What's the fruit that's closest to money? Come on, answer me.
Acorn.
Why?
I don't know. It's the first
not
fruit.
Not a fruit. The first fruit that came to mind. Acorn. An acorn tree.
Apples.
Apples.
Because you like. They can like, be. How do you like dem apples?
I think apples can be bartered with, can't they?
Peanuts.
Peanuts. A peanut tree.
Yeah. Not lemons.
Not lemons.
That's nothing, right?
We yeah.
Lemons.
Yeah.
Grapefruits a bit like a pound coin.
What? Absolutely nonsense. I think the Hung Parliament one drove us a bit round the bend. Complete crap.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, James.
Oh,
thank
pleasure.
You for being here, Sam.
Thank you, Danny, for being here.
You're welcome.
I mean, we're in my house, so I'm quite likely to be here.
That's true. It was weird when I did that episode about you. Broken. Yes, and join us next week. We'll be reviewing this documentary called Dying Laughter.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Dying Laughing?
Dying Laughing,
Dying
I think.
Laughter?
Dying.
That sounds like a horror movie. Release the Dying Laughter.
Yeah.
No.
Dying Laughing.
Laughing. And what else? Something else? The Mummy? Do you want to see that?
Yeah,
oh,
can't
shit.
Wait to fucking see The Mummy. It looks brilliant. I'm champing at the bit to see it.
I like the Bill Russell Crowe says, welcome to the prodigium. I thought that was a brilliant
masterful. Line. I like the bit where the mummy's eyes split into two, you know, each iris. She's got some kind of split eyes.
Fucking mental.
Sick, mate.
Mental.
I love.
Wait, shout out Chris Victory. Work on that film.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Chris Victory.
Mummy Returns.
And yeah, and with that, well, we'll see you on the other side, guys. We'll see you in the future. Our tone and demeanor will be drastically different next week. So look forward to that.
Bye.
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 But I'm interested that he refers to the situation of some workers who might have some job insecurity and potentially unscrupulous bosses. I suspect that there are many members on the opposition benches who might be familiar with an unscrupulous boss. A boss who doesn't listen to his workers. A boss who requires some of his workers to double their workload. A boss, and maybe even a boss who exploits the rules to further his own career. Remind him of anybody.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.